Sharon Salzberg is a central figure in the field of meditation, a world-renowned teacher and New York Times best-selling author, bringing Buddhist wisdom to contemporary challenges. She has a new book coming out in April called Real Life, The Journey from Isolation to Openness and Freedom. And so I am so glad to welcome her to talk about real life, hers, mine, and all of our listeners. So welcome to the program, Sharon.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be with you.
Well, you know, you're one of my favorite people. I don't get to see you nearly enough, but every time I do, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, that was the best use of this hour or 2 hours, however long we're together. So I feel so grateful that you're with us today. And we're doing a New Year's show. We're actually going to take some time, take a moment and offer our listeners some wisdom on what they can do, what all of us can do to just take advantage of this time when it's almost, you know, kind of packaged as a time to think about what the last year was and think about what the next year is. And I'm curious, do you have any rituals of this time of year or anything that you like to do that makes space for those kind of reflection?
Well, first I should say I'm a giant fan of New Year's. And I always often say that as a Jew and a Buddhist and an American, I get three a year. Pleases me no end.
That's awesome. Okay, so yes, we have the Jewish New Year's, which is Rosh Hashanah, right?
That's right.
And then tell us, the Buddhist New Year is...
Buddhist New Year's is the full moon. It's by the full moon, so it's usually February-ish, you know?
Yeah. And what is that called?
Losar.
Okay, and then we have the calendar New Year's. So you've got all kinds of ritual and practices.
I have lots of chances, yeah.
Yeah, you got lots in your back pocket. Okay, so what are some things that you really enjoy doing? And I love the fact that you're a big fan. That's perfect.
Well, one of the things we used to do here, I'm speaking to you from Barre, Mass, where the Insight Meditation Society is. It's right next door to my house, and we used to have a New Year's Eve ritual where we would tear up a calendar and everyone would get to comment on like January and then we'd burn it, you know, like some people with a relish, like forget January, you know, and you know, so we're letting go of the past and sometimes it's with regret, you know, like, gee, I wish that was still happening. Sometimes it's just recognizing it is still happening, whatever. Sometimes it's like, thank God that's over. And I can remember, ironically enough, I don't do that physically anymore with a group and a fire and all that. But I often do it psychologically as a kind of ritual, like, okay, we're going to really work through, to at least some extent, this past year. We're going to start anew. And I remember doing that New Year's Eve 2020, thinking, you know, 2019 was kind of tough. Isn't it great? It's almost over. Like,
yeah.
Minutes left to go. And it was like, whoa, who would have imagined?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually really interesting. I mean, I'm imagining it with the whole ritual of the fire and things like that. And, you know, just this principle of that is no longer here. Like we can't, you know, we can't just stay there, whatever, you know, for good or for ill, it's no longer here. And so like, you know, what are we going to, but I think that process of really reflecting, looking back, I'm curious this year, if there's anything that you're particularly thinking about as far as this past year that really strikes you personally. And you know, whatever comes to mind that you're imagining saying, okay, like time to burn the calendar or time to hold on to that or whatever. Is there anything that you're thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about a lot, you know. It's been an impactful year. I've written two books, you know, two of which are coming out
Congratulations.
Next year. Thank you.
What are the two books? I mentioned one of them. What are the two books? I want to make sure
I, you know, have been very reclusive for almost 3 years now. I came up to Barre in March of 2020 from New York City and thinking I'll go up there for a couple of weeks and ride this out. And then I was here for 8 months before I got back to New York. And, you know, and in that process, I wrote two books. One is Real Life, which began, interestingly enough, when 2 years in a row, actually, in kind of isolation, I watched this program online, Saturday Night Seder, because that was my Seder. I didn't go anywhere. And it was this fabulous compilation of talents. It was one of the first programs I think ever created on Zoom, basically, you know, where the writers never met. But and it was a Seder. It was funny. There were brilliant singers. There were rabbis. I learned a lot. And it reminded me that the word Egypt is actually symbolic for constriction or narrowness or narrow-mindedness. So that journey is the journey from narrowness to expansion, to openness. So hence the subtitle of the book. And so
it's so interesting. That the book. Yeah. And it's interesting that you wrote that in a time when actually your life was very constricted.
That's right.
I mean, like the physicality of it. And,
right.
you know, and the ability to navigate what we would consider like freely the, you know, the physical world.
Yeah. But my inner life was not, you know, and I thank God all the time I had an inner life and could, you know, reside there. So that's that book. And then the last lunch I had in New York in a restaurant, the last time I ate in a restaurant indoors was just before I left. It was during that lunch I decided to leave and come up here temporarily. And I had met with an editor who proposed to me what I call a gift book, like short sayings, illustrations. And I wasn't, you know, I had never thought about anything like that. And then maybe 6 months into being here, I thought, I remembered that conversation. And I thought, oh, our attention span is not so great these days, you know. Maybe that is really the perfect vehicle. So that's what that is. It's called, Finding Your Way. It's a different publisher. And it's illustrated. And it's just these short either passages from podcasts I had done or something.
That's really great. I mean, congratulations. Yeah. That's really, that's marvelous. Well, you're going to come back and we're going to talk all sorts of more about that.
Okay.
I mean, that's really great.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, back to your question, I feel like my life is still full of possibility, but I don't often think that. I turned 70 this year.
Wow.
Much to my amazement. Somebody asked me the other day about 30, and I thought, thank God for you. You know, like, nice. Say it again. You know? Or one of my bugaboos, which I just had to do today, was when you have to enter your birth year on something, you have to scroll and scroll and scroll. Because I started in like 1998 or something. And I think, really?
Yeah.
And I see how it's talking about constriction or narrowness. It would be so easy to think, okay, you know, I started a retreat center. I've done what I've done to whatever degree I could do it well. And just, you know, hang out and be complacent. And the countervailing force is you can never do that. You know, life is always full of possibility. It's a new year. Let's just see where it can go. Maybe it's deepening things I've already done or have tried in terms of my inner life. Or maybe it's something new, you know, and not thinking it's too late, you know.
Yeah, I think that, that is like, that I think is like, a perfect end of year, new year kind of imagination. It's an imagination because it's very easy, I think, to say, well, this is what I've got. This is what I, you know, this is, you know, this is what has happened to me. And, you know, and I just think that the idea that, you know, at 70 or 80 or whatever you are, or, you know, younger and struggling with ever, you know, with, you know, everybody's dealing with it, you know, not, you know, in different ways. And so, you know, the idea that there doesn't have to be stasis, that you can imagine a different way of being. And I think that is like perhaps the gift of kind of spiritual wisdom is, you know, I was just about to go into like the AA, you know, but that goes back to Reinhold Niebuhr, like accept what you you know, have to accept, you know, that there are real things happening, but change what you can change and know the difference, and then do what you can, you know. And yeah, and also, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's also sometimes said it's fine to rest, you know. Like, you don't always have to be like, you know, okay, what's my next plan. I find myself very struggling with the idea of like, okay, I can just chill for a second, because I'm so like go. But so what are some, like, what is a Buddhist scripture to, sorry, I know that that's not the right way to put it, but like, what are some, like, what are some sayings of the Buddha or other things that might that are, can help guide you in this, in this kind of work that you're doing, end of year work?
Well, the thing I did very predominantly with my previous book, Real Change, which came out during the kind of height of the pandemic, was that I had written all of it, you know, by 2019. I turned it in, and then publishing being what it is, you know, it wasn't coming out yet. And when it was about to come out, they delayed it because of the conditions. And so there was like an extra 3 months or something like that. And a friend of mine was reading it, and in order to excerpt it, and he said, you know, I really like the book, but I kept reading those examples you used, and I thought, that's what made you anxious? Wait till you see what's coming. So I took that to heart, and I went to the publisher, and I said, could I possibly write a new preface to help ground or contextualize the book? And they said yes. And so my overarching question to myself in doing that was, what's still true? Like, what can I rely on? What's not going to change in terms of changing conditions? And what I came to was actually the Buddha's saying, amongst other things, I came to the Buddha's saying, which was echoed, you know, generations later by Martin Luther King Jr., hatred will never cease by hatred. Hatred will only cease by love. And that can manifest in the simplest of conversations. It doesn't have to be grandiose or magnificent. And so every day I ask myself, or I remind myself, if this is still your aspiration, you know, bring it to life however you can. And so speaking to that person playing some function in my life, or being a complaining customer, you know, with a service, or seeking information from the healthcare system, or whatever it is, you know, I try to remember that and just bring it to life. And yeah, and saying to myself, and sometimes it's going to shift, you know, what I'm counting on, what is holding me up, what's still true is not going to be the same. But thus far, even in, you know, with that particular maxim, you know, hatred will never cease by hatred. Hatred will only be ceased by love. There are plenty of circumstances where I or anyone might think, not in this one, surely, you know, like, yeah, this has got to be different, you know, this is an outlier.
Yeah. This is the one exception to that rule, and that's, I'm going to take advantage of that loophole.
That's right, you know, with the limited for like 10 seconds, you think, sorry, you know, not going to work.
Well, I think that, you know, I think especially as we confront, you know, what, you know, rising anti-Semitism,
yeah,
rising Christian nationalism, like the hate crimes that are out there, the attacks on LGBTQ people. Like, there's lots of, you know, I don't, you know, the question of like, what's love got to do with it? You know, you wrote a book around love. And so like, and, you know, trying to figure out like how we address these things in productive ways. That's why I keep on trying, like, you know, because I, you know, like anyone, I can clench my fist and be like, you know, don't come for me, you know, I'm going to protect the people who you're my confessor now. I'm confessing that this is like a challenge for me, but I think it's a challenge for most of us. And especially as you expand that, you know, if you can try to do that with your immediate people around you and the people you interact every day, but how do we as a people who are trying to create a world where everyone can have dignity and experience, like, experience love, how do we use that maxim? And I think King was speaking into that when he used it, but How do you imagine, and maybe this is a way for us to begin to think about 2023, how can you imagine us going into 2023 taking that with us in the way we envision our country?
Well, I, on a personal level, I remind myself it's all things big and small, you know, not to disdain the small, listening to somebody or even reminding myself they're a human being, you know? Yeah. And some of it takes, I think, a real exploration of what love means to us, what compassion means to us. And if it's associated with weakness, that's a problem. You know, it doesn't have to be associated with weakness, but it's hard. I mean, it's, you know, clearly it's very hard. And I have a sense of real possibility nonetheless. I mean, sometimes it's just overwhelming. It's so terrible, but... at the same time, you know, there's something arising that feels generative, that feels positive, and that we should never shut the door. I mean, it's just ludicrous, the degree of hatred and so on that's going on. The thing I remind myself of when it seems like not here, I can't do that here, that doesn't belong here. You know, love is too weakening, it's too... beside the point, they're crazy, they're, you know, they would hurt me if they could. I remind myself that they say that the Buddha actually first taught loving kindness meditation as the antidote to fear. And I thought, then I say, would less fear be of any use in this situation? I think, well, yeah, you know,
yeah,
that could be handy, actually.
Yeah, you know,
rather
yeah,
than
absolutely.
Giving in or something like that. It's like, okay, what if I had less fear going into this?
Which is also like a strategy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's like smart to be scared because, you know, running away is okay if I do another day. But I do think like a strategy not to let – I think, you know, intimidation is a tactic. And so like not having fear is actually a very powerful response. I will not let you create a life of fear for me. And I think that that is like something that is – so many of us can relate to. That feels really, really strong. Tell me a little bit about, like, a little more about this book. I love that, you know, we're talking about, you know, all the things like moving, you know, this movement, the real life, the movement. What does freedom mean to you in that equation? That's in the title. Like, what does it mean to move isolation to openness to freedom? You're very particular with your words.
Yeah, thank you.
Like what's that progression and why that progression?
Well, in good Buddhist fashion, I really started with the problem, you know, which he did, you know, quite a bit. There's a lot less rhapsody in Buddhist texts than there is, you know, greed, hatred, delusion. So I started with greed, hatred, delusion. When are we most constricted? When do we feel most narrow? When are we most narrow-minded? So that's when we're lost in greed, hatred, and delusion. So that doesn't mean feeling those things. It means being lost in them. And how do they manifest? So, you know, greed is grasping, and then a kind of more contemporary understanding would be addiction. Hatred is, you know, obvious manifestations of hatred. But I also have shame in there because it's a form of self-hatred and not that onward leading. And then delusion is interesting. You know, in that context, it means confusion, not really understanding, not seeing clearly. But one of the things we do sometimes in that state is we get kind of, we turn toward fundamentalism because we're looking for security rather than admit we don't know. It's too scary. So I have that in there. So, you know, let's look at that. Let's understand those states. How do we approach those states? So it's not through trying to demolish them or annihilate them, but in a way being able to hang out with them, you know, and accompany them and take a look at them, not let them take over, but also not being freaked out about them. And in that state, a space opens up where loving kindness can arise, compassion can arise, clarity can arise, creativity can arise, awe can arise. So I have, that's how I would define freedom, is kind of the space within which these things can emerge.
Oh, I love that. This is going to be another one of those beautiful books that you put out into the world. I'm so excited. I wonder if you would just leave us with, not to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot, some sort of meditation, a brief meditation for our listeners, for me, to go into the new year with.
So you mean an actual practice?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's do it. you can sit comfortably, close your eyes or not, however you feel most at ease. Start just by listening to sounds, which could be the sounds of my voice or other sounds. And let the sounds wash through you. You don't have to block anything. You don't have to condemn anything. Just let it all arise and pass away. Feel the sensations of your body sitting. See if you can feel the earth supporting you. No, we're actually being held up by something. Look at that. And feel space touching you. Usually we think about touching space. We think about picking up a finger and like poking it in the air. Space is always touching us. It's already touching us. We just have to receive it. Feel the breath wherever it's strongest for you or clearest for you. This is the gift of life. One breath. The nostrils, the chest, or the abdomen. And bring your attention to that place and just rest. Welcome to the new moment. Welcome to the new year.
All right. Thank you so, so much. All right. Sharon Salzberg is a globally known meditation teacher and the best-selling author of many books, including Real Change, Mindfulness to Heal Ourselves in the World, and coming in April, Real Life, The Journey from Isolation to Openness and Freedom. Sharon, thank you so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It's really a delight.